8th Mile Training Track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Let the summertime song.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and activity starting to pick up here as registrants to the symposium begin to file in. And we're going to talk to Rich Migliori, kind of a short visit, because I didn't want the week to go by after Cigar Mile Day without a visit from Rich. But Eric Hamelbeck is going to join us as well. Eric's here, and one of the important legal minds for the HBPA with him as well. So we're going to get the first of our perspectives about what the weekend news, what kind of ramifications are involved after the six. We got the Sixth Circuit hearing on Wednesday, and then the news that involved Mitch McConnell. Let me reach back to New York and Case, I got you. I'll handle that. All right. Just going to grab, let me grab Rich here for a couple of minutes. All right. And I'm going to, Talk to our man, Richie. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Just kind of a short segment. I wanted to reach back because we're going to get Danny Gargan on. I was excited for Gargan coming out of the weekend and talk about WNL's win in the Remsen. But some thoughts. Todd's going to join us tomorrow to talk about mind control, and of course he's a University of Arizona alum. Some thoughts about the weekend in New York.
No, it was great. Great way to end the grade one action. The mind control is everything good about a racehorse. You know, just honest, shows up, fights for it. My kind of horse. I had heard that, and I guess it was just a rumor that he was going to stand in New York, and I guess that's not anything confirmed. And I really hope that happens. I think he'd be an incredible addition to the New York Stallion roster. You know, he's the kind of horse people really gravitate to. A horse that shows that kind of grit and fight and brings it. I think he would get a real big reception here. So I kind of hope that that winds up happening. I mean, again, that's something I heard, but apparently nothing's confirmed.
I heard the same thing, but we'll see what Todd's got to say, or maybe get a hold of one of the Brunetti brothers, and we'll see what transpires. I mean, certainly, you know, it's funny because Rick and I went over his career, and there are some things about him, Rich, that were just so impressive. A graded stake win every year of his career, starting with the hopeful, then at two, the Jerkins at three, Tom Fool at four, the Nayrud at five, and now the Cigar Mile at six. Really impressive. And
it's phenomenal. And the way he does it, like, you know, he was surrounded the other day, inside, outside, Wide Barrio, I forget the outside horse's name now, with Saez. I mean, it's like, oh, okay, we got work to do. And he just puts his head out and down and finds more. I just a really fun horse to watch run.
Well, and leaves the best possible way to leave the racetrack. Same was true, of course, yesterday in the Matriarch with Regal Glory going out on the perfect note. The horse that I haven't even mentioned as part of this is Zandon, and Zandon, a non-threatening fourth in here, just beaten three lengths, but how he got bet the way he got bet was a little amazing. Down to 70 cents on the dollar, and what exactly? Why were we so convinced that the one turn mile that he was going to be so impactful here?
Well, especially too, because it really didn't appear to be a tremendous amount of pace.
No,
that was going to play against him. I'm excited about the prospect of him running at shorter distances, but not with the scenario that, you know, effectively played out and appeared that it was going to play out that way, the other day. So I'm with you. I'm 100% with you on that.
Well, let's talk about the two-year-olds. And Rich, you obviously had your opportunity to ride in plenty of Remsens and Demoiselles. And we talked all week leading in and on the weekend preview Friday about, what the nine furlongs means at this time of year. Two-year-olds making that transition from, in some cases, well, when we talk about the filly was stretching out from seven to nine. So, that's a certainly demanding. But some thoughts about what you see when two-year-olds make this. This is a real route, nine furlongs. It's a big transition.
Yeah. But also though, you have to say the filly, Julia, she did run. It's really seven and a half at Keeneland, right? I mean, it's it's at about seven furlongs, but it's really closer to seven and a half. So even though it is a big step, it's not as dramatic as going from a straight seven to the mile and an eighth. But, I hear, and this is like just a pet peeve of mine, people, oh, well, it was a slow race, You got to watch the race. You got to look at what she did in the context of the race to be able to, completely not handling the track, not handling the kickback, jumping up and down. Comes 7-8 wide into the stretch in their second start, going nine furlongs, swallows them up. And anybody who poo-poos a two-year-old because they didn't run fast but overcomes that kind of trip, that two-year-old obviously has ability and is going to improve, is going to get better when she figures the game out more. And what a two-year-old is right now may not be that in a month, may not be that in 2 months. In 6 months, what are they going to turn into? You have to apply. And this is where I wish horse players and people that watch horses would kind of meet more in the middle. There's a middle ground there. You have to have some sort of insight, some sort of imagination to not just go by solely numbers or solely when a horse wins visually impressive. There's a middle ground.
No, that's a point well taken, because there was a huge disparity between the two races, and Julia Shining overcoming all kinds of you know, all kinds of difficulties with Luis Saez, you know, got bet, and certainly from a, you know, from a breeding standpoint, was the horse, frankly, out of both of those races that did figure to appreciate the trip more than anybody. I mean, a Curlin out of Dreaming of Julia, you know, herself a daughter of AP Indy. So huge win for Stone Street, and we'll talk to Todd about Julia Shining and about Mind Control when he joins us tomorrow. The boys' race, and as I mentioned, we're going to have Danny Gargan this morning, but WNL at a fair price, 4-1. In fact, Nick Tamaro, and by the way, congratulations to Nick, who won the contest at Lone Star on Saturday. And I'm sure we'll talk about that when we catch up with Nick at the end of the week. But WNL, a good magic out of the wonderful Wild Gams, the Benny Perkins, Novak Forest Wildcat mare. And this one also a Stone Street bred, but Stone Street partners with West Paces on WNL. And this a terrific duel between WNL and Arctic Arrogance.
Yeah, it was really good, and they ran fast. That was a very good race. You know, it's funny, I ran into Danny at Poppy's place a couple weeks ago, you know, just chatting horses. I was getting some takeout, and he said to me, you know, I got a colt that, you know, and his other horse had won the Remsen. He goes, I think he's every bit as good. And, you know, sure enough, you know, here comes this horse with that effort. So, you know, really sharp insight from him talking about, you know, how high he was on this horse. You know, and again, this was just he and I, you know, chatting at the bar, you know, talking horses, which is one of the fun things about when I stay down at Belmont, that, you know, I go get takeout or I go get something to eat, and I usually run into somebody from the track, and we start talking horses, and it's, you know, that's the good stuff for me. I love, you know, chatting about it, and, you know, you hear these little insights and different things. And but he, you know, listen, anybody who's got a two-year-old this time of year that is capable of getting 9 furlongs, you know, you got to be dreaming about that 10th furlong. You have to be. It's just human nature.
Well, and, you know, Gargan, and I'll bring it up with Danny when he joins us, but he also had that Nashua winner, right? Champion's Dream.
Yeah, well, that's who he was comparing it to. He said, I think, you know, this other horse I have, WNL, is every bit as good as him. So, you know, he had it. He had the handle on it. I mean, and again, if you watch that horse's first two races, you know, he ran well, but you wouldn't think, like, you know, oh, wow, he's going to be as good as that other horse. I mean, it just, you wouldn't even consider that, I don't think. But, you know, again, a two-year-old that stepped up, they improved, they changed. They're kids. They're going to change. And how many years did we see it? How about Charismatic? He had run for a claiming tag before he started everything together and changed. I mean, the best athlete in high school is not necessarily the best athlete coming out of high school. You know, right? There's always a kid that's shaving a little earlier than the rest of them. And, you know, his voice already changed, and now the other kids start catching up.
There you go. Well, interestingly, those two that Gargan's got his hands on, this one a good magic, and the other one a Justify. So first crop products that are excelling, and so a lot to anticipate into next year. Got to get another stake result in as well, Rich, from Saturday. I haven't even mentioned Dr. B yet, winning the Gopher Wand. Butchie Reed was with us last week, and I said to Butch, I guess there's a chance, you know, he had a few stake runners over the weekend in addition to what he did last week. 3 stake wins at 3 different venues for Butch, and here comes Dr. B with a dynamite effort in the Gopher Wand.
Wow, what an effort. I mean, she was just loving the ground. You could see she was just skipping over the top of the ground. It was fun to watch her. And of course, you know, giving Irad the stakes record of 77, you know, obviously we're going to make a lot about that. Biggest thing about Irad to me is this is the 7th consecutive year that he's ridden at least 300 wins on the year. you know how hard that is to do?
Yeah,
to
stay healthy.
That kind of consistency?
Well, stay healthy, first of all.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a whole other story. I mean, right? it's amazing, you know, that guys can put it together because they do stay healthy and in their prime. But it also speaks to just how much he enjoys riding. I mean, the guy rides, and, you know, people get on me when I say this, but I see it. It's apparent to me. It's a 10 claimer or a grade one. He's on his belly. He rides hard. You know, I criticize him at times because I think he goes over the line and there's certain things I wish he wouldn't do. But at the end of the day, you've got to appreciate, admire his intensity and how much he brings to no matter what kind of race it is.
No, well put. This filly, a Liam's Map, bred by Elko Ventures. Cash is King, Chuck Zachney, and LC Racing. The partner up on so many horses, and Butch does a fabulous job for them, wire to wire, and really, she just was in control of this every step. Banksting, who you know, a lot of us, you know, kind of lean toward, solid second here, chasing. Betsy Blue ran well to be third in here. I guess some mild disappointment from Battle Bling, who really didn't mount much of a, you know, much of a challenge.
She did miss the break, yeah. And also it projected to be a much faster pace than she's been running with. And the thing that she's shown now, it's like completely apparent, is her strength is her stamina. She can just stay. She can just keep grinding. She's not a fast horse per se. Like, she's got more of that route speed, but when she can be up close, she's going to continue. She's going to keep on grinding. And once she missed the break, she never had that opportunity to get in that position, and they were going way faster than she's capable of keeping up with anyway.
Yesterday, Bank It and Impassable Donna for Bruce Levine, and Bank It, of course, for the Steve Asmussen barn, Toby Sheets. And Lascano aboard Bank It, and Castellano aboard Impassable Donna in the Stallion Series races. Well, the heavy lifting and the Grade 1 action over in New York, Rich. We just had Keith Dolschel for a good 45-minute conversation talking about a bunch of different things, but most notably his having attended the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. And, of course, as Rich says all the time, he attended the University of Belmont Park.
and I graduated with honors.
Exactly right. Richie, I just wanted to connect, and we'll talk to you next week. I'll be coming to you from Santa Anita, actually, next Monday.
Very cool. I look forward to it, Steve. Have a great time out there.
Hey, hold on. Rick wants to say hello.
Hammer here. I just want to let you know I'm getting back in shape. When the cool weather hits out here, I can get back in the mountains. So when I get out there at Saratoga, I'm going to come see you this time, and we're going to go on a nice hike. You can take me on one of your local.
Let's do it. I got some great spots. We'll have a blast.
I know you do. So I'll be in full shape, ready to roll.
I look forward to it.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Thanks, Mig. Mig4450 on your Twitter machine. That takes us actually right at the top of the hour. Let me first pass the mic to... yeah, we can do that if you want, Hammer. It's a good idea. All right. Not a bad idea. Rick's going to give the headset, or I guess the headset's coming this way. and Eric will have the microphone. Eric Hamelbeck joins us from the National HBPA, and happy to welcome you in. And Peter Eckebert, that has been handling the general counsel responsibilities. And they've
good morning,
been
Steve.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
They've good been morning. Those responsibilities have been extensive. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Steve.
Very glad to be here. Always great to be here in Arizona. I think the guys have again done their best to put on a great conference. I know how hard it is with the way the day's news changes. It's always hard to get things set up. But I'm very happy to be here. So it's a beautiful drive coming in here this morning.
Well, and of course, most people listening and you know, having taken in a lot of the you know, a lot of the news from the weekend. Their question, Eric, that everybody immediately has is, what was the story with the Tigers on Saturday?
Well, I tell you what, in full disclosure, I was a Nussmeier fan before Daniels. So they should have put that kid in before Daniels had a chance to wreck it and trying to play hurt. The kid throws for over 300 yards in basically the second half alone. And, you know, to score 30 points on Georgia, I'm okay with it. You know, we won the West, and at the end of the day, anything – in the SEC is a positive accomplishment. So thanks for bringing that up.
I had to. It's funny because everybody on the plane was watching the game. It was very funny actually. On the flight, was I can't remember if it was the first flight or the second. Must have been the second flight
probably.
And everybody on Southwest was all the screens I could see were tuned to the Bulldogs.
Well,
and
what else was on?
And Tigers. I actually watched. I'll tell you what was on. I watched the replay of the Eagles Packers game again. To be honest, just to pass the time. Honestly, well, let's talk about the hard hitting news and. Didn't know coming here. I mean, I knew we were going to discuss the sixth court hearing on Wednesday and what that could eventually, you know, mean in terms of furthering the evaluation of HISA as constitutional, unconstitutional. But in the meantime, the news that seemed to have been very
out of the blue.
out of the blue, rumored or anticipated.
Yeah, no,
the idea that, you know, that there was a legislative fix potentially that could be authored. In fact, you know.
Yeah, no, we have always anticipated that as a possibility. And so I'll speak a little bit on a layman's level and then turn it over to Peter. But at the end of the day, this is something we always anticipated, and by that I mean trying to correct a bill that was not constitutional. So that's fair. But at the also, we point to, once again, this is going to try to be slid into a package that has probably nothing to do with anything agriculture, much less horse racing. So, you know, we're back to that non-transparent mode of trying to get something passed. Now, we are still working diligently to determine if that's the case, if there will be an omnibus package or not. Certainly, Intel will tell us that that's most likely. But we've also realized that there are plenty of other things going on in D.C. In particular, we know Senator McConnell is very deep into the weeds on the Legal Defense Fund. Or the legal defense bill. So that, you know, that in and of itself, there's a lot going on that certainly makes us aware of other things that they're going to have to deal with, but we are not stopping and still pushing against this.
And before we talk about the ongoing, you know, gears turning in terms of the legalities and the Sixth Circuit and how they're going to treat things. Eric, is there practical solutions to the issues, not the constitutionality, which obviously the legislative fix could repair, but are there potential negotiable points that can be included in whatever tweaking this legislative fix involves? And one thing that none of this anonymous source article discussed, which I got to mention that Ed Martin very pointedly brought up, is funding. If they're going to do this, if they're going to, you know, jury rig their, you know, their bill, then can we get the thing paid for simultaneously? Has that been broached by anybody?
Certainly that's one aspect, but I think the thing that I want to address most and most importantly from your first question I'm going to say no when we're looking at the bill that we're looking at now. Again, we won on one aspect of the unconstitutionality side. There are many. The hearing that's coming up December 7th, that what we call case two, there is another aspect of unconstitutionality. The case three that's going on in the Western District of Louisiana, that's a different aspect of unconstitutionality. And even when you look at the fourth lawsuit that was filed in Texas by the racetracks there and others, that's a different aspect. So there are a multitude of issues with what we are and have been seeing. Now, funding is even an aspect of unconstitutionality that has never been broached from a litigious fashion as of yet. There's a very prominent racetrack owner that told me early on in this process, one of the reasons that he did not like the bill and felt it was unconstitutional is the very reason that Ed keeps bringing up, there's no funding from the federal government. And that in and of itself is another unconstitutionality aspect. Now, what we feel as if continues to get overlooked, our goal is national uniformity for medication. We are still going to look at the possibility of a national medication compact, working with the other breeds that we feel as if could be done. Yes, we can shoot each other and say it should have been done a long time ago. Okay, that's fine, but right now, going forward, that's the hope, is to look at a true national compact that we can essentially leave the practices that are in place now, but we do them on a federal level as opposed to a state level.
Is there any dialogue?
Yes.
There is dialogue. I mean, with?
Well, with.
Not with.
There has been no communication to us.
They've made no attempt to engage.
No attempt whatsoever. They've made no attempt to engage whatsoever.
Peter Eckebert joins as well here, and Peter, from the legal the legality standpoint, your thoughts about what start with case two, I suppose, and also you should probably chime in on your satisfaction level with the outcome in the Fifth Circuit.
Well, I guess one of the points, just to carry on what Eric was talking about there, about tweaking the bill, I think the bill is in such a state that tweaking would be almost impossible. It would require a major overhaul, because there are so many things, in our opinion, that are defective and are unconstitutional. Not just the delegation issue, but the issue of a due process, and that's one of the things that's come up in this fourth case that was filed in Amarillo, Texas, deals with the fact there's no jury trial, that you're facing serious penalties. The first offense can be $50,000 to $100,000 and a suspension for 10 years, which is basically
a life sentence.
And so there's no possibility of that. The expense of an appeal is astronomical, and so from all intents and purposes, due process is not there, in our opinion. We also have, the transparency is a big issue, and you've got to open the doors and let us know what's going on. Everybody know what's going on. Things need to be held in public. The hearings, when you're making rules, should never be done behind closed doors and without any reporting as to how that was passed or what happened. So, I mean, we also, the funding, as Eric mentioned, is just a critical issue that needs to be addressed, and so a little tweak is not a tweak to satisfy the delegation thing and give more supervisory power to the FTC is not going to cut it. I mean, that might make it constitutional from one respect, but it's unconstitutional in a whole lot of other respects that are soon to come to the forefront. This was like one that we felt was so egregious that it needed to be addressed immediately, and we felt like we could get something done in a relatively short period of time. In litigation, relatively short period of time is all relative, but this is,
It's been on a timely basis.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
just to jump in with, the definition of a technical corrections bill is very minimal. We're talking about crossing T's and dotting I's. This is not a technical corrections that can be had, and I'm doing air quotes, we're talking about basically doing another bill. And that's why if you go through the proper bill process, which bills should have done, and we all agree the HISA bill did not do that, that's what makes it frustrating. If you're not going to go through the proper bill protocols, you know, that in and of itself should be a red flag. And that's what we're frustrated with, but also trying to determine if there's any substantial information that says what's came out over the weekend is exactly accurate. So,
When will we know that?
We'll know that if not today, this week for sure. I think we'll have a better understanding of where that intel came from. Again, paraphrasing Ed Martin, he always says, "Consider the source." You know, at the end of the day, not that it's not a reputable outlet, but to not have any sources that would even go on record, that's a little dodgy for me to kind of put a lot of faith into, especially with some of the other intel we have coming out of D.C. You know, again, we are talking to the proper committee members. We've talked to, we feel, the proper senators that are, you know, and I'll just say Senator Grassley in particular, who's been very helpful to our position, has even given us a quote that we're going to be able to put out in public that says this is not the right way to do this. You know, for the Iowa horsemen is his concern, but he understands this addresses nationally, and he feels, along with Representative Gooden in Texas, who's been very friendly, and again, who actually was a co-sponsor of the bill. But he said that's not what he signed up for. And so that, at the end of the day, I think is going to be very beneficial. But we'll know in the next couple of days a bit more about the intel that came out over the weekend.
Peter, from not to suggest that you know that you've got lobbyist know-how, but what, from a legal standpoint and from an adjustment standpoint, what would McConnell and his cohorts be trying to amend from the original bill? That, I mean, you made it sound like even if they address the specifics of the Fifth Circuit's ruling, that it doesn't necessarily suddenly make this magically constitutional. But what are they trying to adjust?
I would think they're trying to adjust the Fifth Circuit, because I think, you know, that has to be their focus, and that was primarily the delegation issue. Now, the Sixth Circuit case is going to be heard on December the 7th, the oral arguments to be heard. That also includes a count of anti-commandeering, which is basically the federal government coming in and telling us, taking over the state's responsibilities, telling them what to do and that sort of thing. So that's something that's been in the state purview for a century and a half, that now the federal government's coming in. That's going to be addressed in the Sixth Circuit case as well. And the judges on that panel, Judge Sutton, Judge Griffin, two of those three judges, and Judge Jones is the other one. I'm not sure how he'll come down, but it seems clear that Judge Sutton and Judge Griffin are very states' rights oriented and would likely find this unconstitutional. You never can say for certain, but just given their makeup and their past history and decisions, it would appear that there's a good shot that they would find this to be unconstitutional, not only on the delegation grounds, but on the anti-commandeering grounds. And then the other issues that are not before them, but that we feel are equally unconstitutional, deal with due process and the funding. And that will come up eventually, but not necessarily right now. So to go ahead and just do a fix of one little issue to us is not appropriate, and it's just going to just create more havoc and more confusion and more issues for the horsemen, more expense and all the rest of it, you know.
You mentioned Texas. How does where we are right now affect the Racing Commission and their, you know, their standoffish Amy Cook who was being called a heretic and a lunatic 6 months ago, ends up being prescient in the way she argued, and she was on with us, and deserves, you know, where does she go, famously, where does she go to get her reputation back?
She is excellent, by the way, and we agree with
that. Was obvious.
100%.
That was obvious, yes, to anybody who listened to her.
Yes.
If anybody wanted to go toe to toe with her, they were going to end up on their backside, to say the least. The big concern is in the offing here is the Sam Houston meet and the ability for Sam Houston to export their signal. Is there room for injunction or anything that can help them on that front?
Let me tell you, right now things are happening fast and furious, and we as the HBPA would never be giving legal advice to the commission or any of the states. They have their own attorney general. They have, you know, their own internal legal firm that they can consult with, and they know basically what to do. But I would say that there are a lot of things that can come down quickly, and that we're looking at, and we're also participating in to try and make that happen, and to give some kind of to take away a lot of this confusion and give the horsemen you know, some definitive ways forward. And again, I'm not saying we're in the business of giving legal advice to other folks, hopefully something will come down shortly.
So there is potential.
There's potential.
Yeah, there's definitely potential. And again, Texas is a part of that Fifth Circuit decision, right? So
yes,
they're in it, and certainly more will come out hopefully fairly soon with, again, case three, that original enjoining order that came out for West Virginia and Louisiana. There's a lot going on with that case that should come to light, hopefully even by the, well, certainly
this
before
week,
Christmas,
right? Yeah.
But hopefully this week.
This week.
Yeah. So.
Well, then you're undeterred, clearly.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And what message, Eric and Peter, what message do you want to deliver to stakeholders and horse players, bystanders, and I would also say industry, you know, active industry participants and even industry leaders, that
right.
because as you and I, Eric, have charted this from the beginning, let's just say, I mean, you have neutral. You have some neutral media approach, like Matt Hegarty, that just reports the facts as they occur. And then there's complete agenda-driven reporting of everything. And not to mention smearing of your character and your interests,
right,
and the interests of the national HBPA.
Right. Well, I think that I'm going to continue to say that from the national HBPA standpoint, unwavering to push against this method of uniformity. This bill, as we've stated and outlined for a number of years, is not what's best for the industry. For years, and I know I've said this to you, Steve, but this is something I'm trying to drive as a motto. For years, we have wanted uniformity, but you didn't hear an uprising about the rules. And what has happened is this organization, this corporation, has come in and they have blown up the rules to the point of changing specifications on horseshoes. When was that ever considered a significant problem? So we don't need the rules blown up. We didn't need the rules blown up. We need to work towards a system that can codify the model rules on a national level and then put them in place and then work towards making them better. You know, testing is not, I'm going to say, the way to catch these alleged cheaters. But the rampant discussions about this industry being full of cheaters is and remains to be inaccurate.
And damaging.
And damaging to the industry, to the participants that run this race 99% free and clean. You cannot continue to hear that in the media and go to work each day and feel good about what the hell you're doing. So, you know, We want uniformity just as much as anybody else. I hope that by working with other organizations, that being other breeds right now, I don't have a lot of support even from other thoroughbred industry organizations. But, you know, thankfully we've got the group of veterinarians that are pushing with us with NARV, the National Association of Racing Veterinarians. The AQHA continues to push with us, and the USTA and Russell Williams and his excellent leadership. We feel as if we have a better way that will also include funding, but most importantly will be constitutional and legal. Sorry that some people don't understand what unconstitutionality means, but it is and needs to be a legal process going forward.
Let me respond real quick, too. 100% what Eric says is right on, and the fact that he articulated the negativity much better than I have, and it's so true and so troubling that those in the industry that ought to be touting it and bring it forward are the very ones that are giving the negative aspects of the industry. The thing you asked before was, what can horsemen do now? Get in touch with your congressmen, your senators, and let them know that the bad stuff that's happened to you with HISA. Let them know the issues and tell them to become active and stop it, and don't let this Band-Aid come about and put it back into effect, because we don't need that.
Well, we will. From a next step standpoint, oral arguments on
December
Wednesday.
December 7th, right. Uh-huh.
And how quickly will the Sixth Circuit render a ruling?
Well, we would hope that it would be fairly quickly, but you never know. I mean, they're under no time deadline.
What was the ratio for the Fifth Circuit when they heard
that was argued August the 30th, and then we received it November 18th. The
six
decision.
Weeks.
So, you know, I was relatively quickly. This one should come down relatively quickly, we would think, because the Judge Hood's decision, who is a district judge in Kentucky that's being appealed, that the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati is looking at, his decision was based in large part upon Judge Hendricks' decision, the federal judge in Texas, whose decision was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. So there are many aspects of Judge Hood's decision that sort of mirror what Judge Hendricks said, which would make it a lot easier for the Sixth Circuit to come down quicker with a decision. But you know, you never know the judges are appointed for life, and they don't have deadlines. So
right.
You know,
yeah, we've been saying that we feel as if, because that ruling from the Sixth initial lower court, if you read it, was very much based on the ruling that came from Lubbock, Texas, but also people tend to forget the ruling from Lubbock, Texas. Judge Hendricks, his opinion was about as positive for the other side, as you might say, as it was to uphold the constitutionality, because he almost literally said his court can't make any changes. It's got to be at the next level. So we think and we hope that that will lead to the sixth.
So in other words, he basically concurred.
He punted.
He concurred with the premise, but had no teeth to make
correct
any impactful
correct
decision.
Well, I think and he was honestly a very he's a very knowledgeable judge. He asked fantastic questions during oral argument. He was and his opinion was about the most friendly of a decision to the other side that lost than I've ever read. And he has great quotes that we used in our arguments on appeal to try and get the Fifth Circuit to agree that it's unconstitutional, and they did. He just basically said, look, guys, there's another case above in higher court, another decision that I don't feel like I can go against. I don't have that authority. They can. If they want to, they can change it, which they did.
Which is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically he said, you guys have a really nice personality.
Hey, I want to take a second. Rick's worked with my daughter. She's taking her last final exam at Western. Wishing her good luck today. So, hopefully.
What's her plan? Is she going to?
She's sports broadcasting journalism. So, hopefully, she'll be sitting in your seat one day and helping you out. And so, yeah. Yeah, no, she had a great opportunity at Kentucky Downs. And So she's definitely on that path, and yeah, hopefully she can get an internship with one of the local channels here pretty soon.
Nice, yeah. Very nice.
Yeah,
you mentioned the broadcast. I have not checked this morning, but certainly sending out wishes. Denny Crum in dire health struggles.
I saw that on Twitter. That.
And
He says Hannah may be taking your job. She may be taking his job.
That's right. That's right.
And I'm sure he'd be quite happy to turn it over to her.
She's tough.
I love it. Eric Hamelbeck, Peter Eckebert, thank you so much. And we'll continue to try to bring these issues to everybody, to help everybody. You know, appreciate how important it is and bring it to you on an even-handed basis as well. Eric Hamelbeck, Peter Eckebert. We're going to stay here. We've got, in fact, just exactly a half an hour. And Hammer, who's been, I think. Now you've had some sustenance. You had yourself a pastry and a little fruit cup.
I was a little off this morning.
You were peckish. Peckish.
Yeah, they didn't peckish. Have my the smoothie maker was
no
not
smoothie.
Working.
They said they had no fruit.
Oh yeah, it was crazy. But and you know, after listening to these two gentlemen, you know that commercial where they say "Stay in your lane, bro." they're in the lane. I'm not getting into that lane.
In the legal. The legal, the jurisprudence and the legalities. There we go. Let's get it there. Yeah, beautiful. Now, it has to be at every step along the way here. I want people to understand what the issues are and what to expect and what everything means as it goes along.
If there's one positive from HISA, I think it's that. Oh, I'm sorry.
One positive that comes from HISA is that the horsemen know they need to get involved, they need to stay active, they need to see what's going on, and they need to get in touch with their congressman and let them know how bad things have been and that they don't want to see this continue.
Fair enough. There we go. Hammer, what you
well,
been...
why don't we, as we're waiting for Robert Hartman to come by, why don't we talk about the calendar real quick? We
might
as we have a couple right here in front of us. we'll push it a few more times this week because we can. There's Robert Hartman over there. But once again, we're doing the yearly calendar giveaway this year. Kentucky Downs has stepped up. Kentucky Downs and the Kentucky HBPA has stepped up, and I had an interesting story. Got a knock on the door a couple nights ago. And it was raining, whatever. I go, what's going on? I look out there, and it was kind of a UPS guy. And he's got these boxes. They're small little boxes. And he goes, I go, yeah, pretty heavy, aren't they? And he goes, what's in these things? I said, calendars. He says, oh, man, what can we know? What kind? I said, oh, they're from a racetrack. And he goes, oh, from Santa Anita. Which, first of all, I'm going, oh, man, he knew about
the calendar.
I said, no, I'm going to go get you one. And I brought it back, and it was a Kentucky Downs. He goes, let me get this straight. You work here or live here and work there? I said, I work all over the place. And the guy went on to tell me about his days. You know, he goes to the track, and I was like,
wow,
this is great.
That's great.
So I gave my old car. I said, here, call me. Anytime you want to go to the racetrack. So it was great to just hear the guy perk up at Santa Anita and Del Mar. You had a trifecta at Del Mar the day before. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. So we're doing the calendar giveaway again. Those of you know, we always ask you to do a little task. And this year's what we're asking you to do is send us a photo from any concert that you've been to. Or any sporting event that you've been to, like from your grandson's Little League to the Ramones to anything that you were at.
How'd you settle on the Ramones?
Well, you know what was weird? I did my daughter punched in my Apple Play, and they come up with the favorites.
Yeah.
You know what the number one song came up? Sheena is a punk rocker.
Oh, that's funny.
Sheena is. And I said, I'm going, no, it's a good running song. So maybe that's where it was. So I thought it would be Paradise by the Dashboard Light because I run to that too. But Sheena's a punk rocker came up. So that's where the Ramones was on my head. Anyway, so send a photo of a concert or a sporting event to Kentucky Downs Calendar, spelled out, Kentucky Downs Calendar @yahoo.com or KY, abbreviated KY Downs calendar at yahoo.com. Put calendar in the subject, and please remember to put your address. I get
name and address.
I get it's great. Everybody gets excited. You get a story, and then I go, whoop, what's the address? So we're there's names are starting to pile up, and the envelopes came, which that means it's time to start writing them out. So we're happy to do it, and thank Kentucky Downs and the Kentucky HBPA for that. And now stepping in is the leader of the show here. Robert Hartman, who's taken over duties as the
chair of the racetrack.
The chair of the racetrack industry program. So I tell you, all of his students that, you know, each time there's a change, we're always like, God, I hope they get somebody good. So when your name came up, it was like, okay, we're good. Everybody's good. Don't worry about it. So Robert Hartman.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. We're excited about this year's symposium. It looks like we're going to have close to 550 people here from the racing industry, from both the U.S., Canada, and around the world. So folks from Paris and London and Sweden and Argentina and the Dominican Republic. And it's
Australia.
Yes, a lot of Australians. Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty cool how we attract an international audience to our little humble town of Tucson.
We talk. In fact, Keith Dolschel joined us from NYRA and Hammers here, obviously, graduates of the program. The program basically changes with the industry, Robert, and we had a difficult period. There's no, you know, nobody would doubt what pandemic, you know, did for everybody. That includes, you know, in terms of recruiting students and you know, getting into the program. Talk a little bit about what you've, you know, what you've essentially confronted here, and you know, your thoughts about the future and interplay with the industry resources and how the RTIP plans to grow.
Yeah, so one of the key focuses for us when I first got here was get the symposium back to what it once was. So in its heyday, when I graduated from the racetrack industry program in 1992, we would get 1,000 people here. I mean, this was the place to be, and there was a lot more racetracks. There was a lot more industry organizations that held meetings here, but we wanted executives and horsemen and other folks to come back to Tucson. So we made that a key focus because that's really the highlight for us is this event. So last year we had 400 people, this year up to 550. So we're heading in the right direction. And the student recruiting is tough. You know, as the industry consolidates, I think potential students are worried, is there going to be a place for me? You know, with fewer horses being bred, with fewer racing opportunities, students are concerned, and I hear that concern. So, you know, we're trying to get out into the industry. One thing we really did this year was highlighted our alums and the success of our alums, and I think that's really helped get some new students. So we had six new students enter the class this year, which is an okay number. And I could tell you right now, 100% of our graduates will have a job waiting for them if they want to work in the industry.
You know, interrupt real quick on just what you're saying. We're having our little racing secretaries meeting here in a couple hours here. And how come everybody else is an hour? We're 3 hours.
You have a lot to say.
We have a lot to say. But one of the items is hiring and keeping help in today's environment. And like Robert says, everyone that comes out of here, there will be a job for you. So, anyone out there listening that's thinking about coming and worried about a job, I can almost guarantee you, you go through the program here and go through an internship or two, you know, at various places, you will find a job in this industry.
Yeah, the first racetracks said, if you have any students coming out that need work, we have work for them. I mean, they have that many openings for folks, and, you know, almost sight unseen. I think our program is kind of a stamp of approval. You know, if you make it through our 4 years here, it's kind of like you're ready to go, as opposed to hiring somebody just off the street. So the industry trusts us, and they trust that they're going to get a good education and that students will come out well prepared.
Well, and that message, I actually touched on that with Keith, because I know just from experience and from the years that I've been coming here and the years we've featured RTIP, parents are listening and they've got sons and daughters that are interested in the game and interested in the sport and, you know, having a life and a career in it. And it's a real misnomer to think that, you know, that the industry is withering, because it's just not true. I mean, there's all, in fact, when it comes to the opportunity to service the industry, it continues to grow. And whether it's, you know, whether it's an operation like BetMakers and what they're doing, here's Sky World, Global Tote, there's all these entities, and there's all these different jobs, and there's all these different paths, and none of that is going away. None of that is contracting.
Yeah, there's a lot of perception, right? You know, when I get those calls, people are concerned what they read in the paper, and whatnot. So, you know, we have to do our job to correct that. And I can tell you right now, there is a job for any student that gets out of here, whether it's at the racetrack, on a breeding farm, in one of these other entities that services the racing industry. There are plenty of jobs out there.
No, it's all the different areas, insurance and veterinary sales, or supplement, and you know, the various things. There's just nobody, I think, appreciates the infrastructure that's involved. And you know, then there's lots of capital expense that is going toward innovation. So even, you know, even people that are in certain walks of life, that, you know, that you wouldn't automatically make a connection. When we think about a lot of the AI handicapping products that are out there, I mean, if there's developers, if there's code writers,
right,
and whatnot, that have an interest in the game, there's 15 different companies. Scotty McKeever could use you at Equine Edge and so forth. I mean, there is just no area of life and expertise and fields of study that there isn't a connection to racing.
Yeah, and I was talking to Byron King from the Blood Horse. They're looking for journalists. So he called me and said, hey, if you have anybody that's good at writing, we're hiring a racing writer. You know, so you don't put journalism and horse racing necessarily together at the top of your mind, but there's jobs out there in that world as well.
And, well, since we're talking about the program, and you did have Keith on, and I fit into that mold as well. You can come back a little bit later. I mean, I came back, I think it was 24 when I came, and Keith came, said he came, was 28 or 29. So if you're, you know, doing something that you're not real, you know, punching a clock somewhere and you go, this isn't so much fun, and you do have an interest in racing, don't be shy. Come back here. The school here is, I mean, it's a great place to come, but there's plenty of people your age here, is what I'm saying. Don't you're not going to be a standout.
Right. And the tagline that we use is follow your passion. You know, find, you know, you if you're passionate about racing, you know, don't just, you know, as you say, work a 9-to-5 job that you're miserable with. You know, find something that you really enjoy doing. And there's that saying about, you'll never work if you enjoy what you're doing. Never work a day in your life. You know, I screw that one up, but, you know, something like that about it's not work, right, if you enjoy what you're doing.
Out of curiosity, how often has there been matriculation over from the general, from Gen Pop at University of Arizona? Have you successfully lured anybody, you know, from?
Yeah, so we have an intro to racing class. I have 25 students in that class. So even though we have fewer students within the program, there's interest. People are wanting to take that intro class. We have an international business student in that class. We have folks that want to see if this is something that works for them. So, you know, that's kind of our feeder system into the program from the general university. So, it's pretty cool.
Can they audit? Can they just audit the RTIP?
You know, once you're a full-time student, there isn't any extra cost to add another class. So it's a two-credit class. It's you know, fairly easy to get into.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. And folks just take it that have no equine experience, that just want to learn more about racing and something pique their curiosity. We have one student that's like, I've always wanted to go to the Kentucky Derby. I wanted to learn more about racing, and she's taking the class. You know,
well, that's so funny.
Pretty neat, yeah.
And some could possibly come in on the, like, the animal sciences end. They have the husbandry
sure,
part and,
sure.
and, you know, you know, not have an interest in racing per se until they find out, wow, this is kind of cool, and head over that way.
Yeah.
On that topic, actually, last year, and I forget, I went into town. And ever since, Hammer, ever since you took me to that hotel, I always go back and get the calendar at the...
Oh, downtown.
Not the Coronado. What is it called? The
Congress?
The Congress yeah. Hotel. Thank you. I knew it started with a C. But I came back a different way. I was driving back up to the foothills here, and I went past the farm for the first time.
On Campbell.
Is that wherever it was, right. I went by this enormous spread. I mean, it goes for blocks and blocks and blocks, and I actually took a picture and I sent it to Chuck Simon, and it's the, you know, it's the animal husbandry and the animal science study.
Yeah, you actually drove by the small farm. That one you drove by was our smaller farm. We have another farm to the east of where we are right now at Los Ventana Canyon Resort. And it's called Almora, and it's 88 acres that was donated to us from Bazie Tankersley and her estate. And there's probably 80 head of horses there. So that Campbell Avenue farm is still used. The vet school uses that a little more. Plus, we have this other farm. So we probably have a total of, you know, 150 acres of farmland with horses on it. So it's pretty neat.
Got a... I'd love our tours. Is there any opportunity to go see what goes on over there?
For you, we can give you a VIP tour, of course. But it's not open. They're not generally open to the public for security reasons. But yeah, no. If we want to head out there one morning, you could check it out.
Well, and on that same topic, I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in rural Connecticut. So, and UConn was literally, you know, 30 minutes. And they used to take us, and they would take us to the chicken coops and to the horse and the milk barns and everything else, and with the idea of essentially, you know, recruiting interest in ag science. I mean, is there anything going on? I mean, on that front.
Yeah, I think those farms are fairly closed. If you want to come out as a potential student and have some interest in it, tours are given all the time.
Interesting.
But they're just not general, you know, tours open to the general public.
Well, and here's a tremendous question from the ever-curious Freddie Moe, our man Freddie Moskowitz, who is you know, has sold a couple of businesses and is wondering, is there online opportunity? Is there... University of Arizona offering any online studies?
Right. So the university does. The racetrack industry program is not yet online. That's something we're actively pursuing. It would be a shorter program. It wouldn't be a four-year program. So we'd have to condense down the classes. So it'd be more like a certificate in horse racing, not a four-year degree. But it that takes some time working through the university red tape to get that approved. That's something we're actively working on.
And seeing Mike over here, what's going on at Rito?
Rito's still operating. Rito's going to operate weekends February through May. So a lot of our students work there. A lot of our racetrack announcers that have come through the program started at Rito and got called their first race. We actually have a student, an 18-year-old student, that wants to be an announcer, and he called his first race at Turf Paradise as an 18-year-old kid. The announcer let him call a race. That was pretty neat. So we really push the hands-on opportunities. We really push. We went to Indiana Grand or Horseshoe Indianapolis. Sorry, I'm a dinosaur. I still call things by their old names. Horseshoe Indianapolis for the Bank of America Challenge Championships with students. We went to South Florida and was at the Pletcher Barn. Billy Badgett gave us a tour of the facility. We got to hang out with Pete Aiello and the stewards. Just, we really believe in getting students out and getting their hands dirty and not just sitting in the classroom.
Well, the opportunity to carve out a career in horse racing, it can start right here. It also, as we discussed with Keith, and I used Joe Longo as an example. I used Steve May, 30-year-olds who wanted to completely change the direction of their lives and have, you know, done so. There's a perfect example of the diversity. Steve May is in the regulating side in the you know, in the
he works for GLI now. Well, now he works for GLI.
That's
yeah,
right,
he just
actually.
Moved over.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Then you think about Joe, who is managing the signal for Naira and doing the contract negotiations, and then Keith working in the racing office. Guys that completely, you know, changed the direction of their career.
Yeah, we have a 30-year-old student now that's the son of a jockey, and he was his dad's jockey agent. And he goes to school 5 days a week, and now he's a jockey's agent at Turf Paradise on the weekends. So he's still making ends meet by being a jockey agent, but he's going to school because he wants a career in management. So it's pretty neat.
And Robert, give everybody a refresher on your industry ties and how, you know, how you gravitated to the program.
Yeah, so I graduated. I just went to the racetrack. My family didn't own horses or anything. Just my dad would take me to Aqueduct and Belmont and Saratoga, and we would handicap the races, and it would be a lot of fun. And then I found out about the program. I graduated in 1992. I had an internship at Saratoga. They hired me on full-time at Naira. Then I went to Santa Anita. I would work with, I heard you talking about the calendars earlier, Candace Coder Chu. The calendar was like the love of her annual work there. So she would spend a month or two on that calendar, and it was really a labor of love for her, and I would always help her out with that. So it's funny how things come full circle. Then I ran Golden Gate Fields. So we installed the Tapeta racing surface while I was there with Michael Dickinson. So if you want to talk about Michael's stories, we can go to the bar later. And there's plenty. I have plenty of great Michael stories. He's such a character. And he actually just spoke to one of my classes last week. He was a guest speaker and talking about surfaces and training styles and, you know, jumps and flat racing in Europe compared to the U.S. So the students were really, really excited to listen to him. Now I've come back to the industry in this capacity.
Did he take Tapeta footings? Is he here?
Michael's not here. No, he couldn't make it out. Yeah, he's been here in the past.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we talked about it. We invited him to speak on a panel. And it just didn't work in his schedule for him to make it out here. So hopefully we could have him out here next year.
Robert Hartman, and as always, the show, delighted to be here, and I think this is maybe my 10th year doing this. And
thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate you coming out year in and year out and promoting the program and promoting the symposium. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
And we got someone in the bullpen here who was around when I was here, Remy Belloc. Was
a legend.
So he's here now, and we had some fun with. He was here when he was one of my
hey guys, how's it going?
Teachers here.
Remy,
at the
good
time.
To see you.
And, good to see you as well.
So,
yeah.
You know, we kind of have a little laugh because we did have some fun.
Yeah, what happened in the 80s stays in the 80s.
Exactly.
We
exactly. But you're every time I look up, you're doing something new. So you're still in Kentucky, though, right?
Yeah. I'm like that character in MASH, the Colonel Flag. I'm the wind. Nobody sees me come. Nobody sees me go. it's all good.
And you're doing a little more drawing.
I am.
You're back. You know, back in the footsteps of, of course, the one and only Peb.
Yeah, no, but, it's exciting stuff. You know, we were in school back in the 80s, and a bunch of us are still kicking around. You know, I see a lot of our old colleagues here this year for a little alumni gathering, so it's great to come back. And, you know, Rick, like you said, I'm working with a community college in Lexington called Bluegrass Community Technical College, where we have an equine studies program. It used to be like a racing school, like Chris McCarron helped launch and all that. And now we do riding, but also do all the equine studies, get kids ready to work in the industry and stuff. So
that's it. This is from the North American riding.
Right, it's the next version of the North American Racing Academy.
Right.
Because what we found is that. Unlike Europe, you know, where you have one centralized kind of regulatory body that licenses all the riders, here, you know, we really couldn't create a function where all riders had to be licensed through that school in the U.S. because of states, you know, each state has a different regulation. And what we also found is that a lot of horsemen, trainers, employers said, you guys need to expand. We need not only riders, but we need assistant trainers, grooms,
horsemen.
And so we are one of the only, if not the only, two-year community college-based equine studies program of its type. We have about 20 horses off the racetrack that we keep in training at the Thoroughbred Center, and we have the students there morning, noon, and night working on horses hands-on and then taking classes at the campus later in the day. So it's a pretty good...
I didn't realize that you did the full... Is Chris still involved in it
No,
at
he's
all?
Retired now. Yeah, no, and so I'm kind of also stepping away from day-to-day. I'm doing more industry liaison, working on fundraising
right.
and things like that, and working with employers because, you know, one thing I find is that at the Newmarket Racing School, the French Racing School here in America, 95% of our employers... Our employees now are gals. And I talk to trainers and all that. I say, you know, yeah, you can't have the workforce you wish you had. You have to deal with the workforce you have. And if you don't modernize, they're all going to go to Amazon, right? You know,
right.
Young workers today are not going to live in a tack room and get $8 an hour anymore, you know. And so that's kind of my main job. And, of course, I also find time to do the drawings, which is a lot of fun. So,
Remy, give me the official name, because I want to make sure to publicize
sure.
this properly. I mean, Bluegrass Community and Technical College, or
correct.
Is that different?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So we're based at BCTC, Bluegrass Community Technical College, and it's the BCTC Equine Studies Program.
Is that in Lexington?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And BCTC is like the community college that services the Lexington area. I've been there now for 10 years, and the program's been around there, started as NARA and now as BCTC Equine since 2006.
So that's tremendous. And I've heard of it, and organization like KEEP.
Yeah,
has you know I'll get emails and I'll see references.
Right.
So I'm delighted to actually get the specifics out there. For, particularly, I'm sure again for you know there's parents whose sons and daughters are not going to go to conventional necessarily go on to conventional.
Right.
It's like almost like a BOCES concept.
Yeah, exactly. For us New Yorkers, BOCES. I'll give you the elevator speech. Is that we have great programs like the UK Ag Equine Program, RTIP program, 4-year university programs.
Louisville.
However, there's a lot of Louisville, for example, as well, and Midway and schools like that. There is nothing between high school and a big investment of money and time for a 4-year degree that fits in there. So we get a lot of kids who may not have the means or ability to go to a 4-year program. They'll come to us, they'll get their associate's degree, so they'll accumulate like 60 credits in equine studies classes and all that, and hands-on. They'll go out and work for a while, and we place 100% of our students into jobs. And then if they want to come back a few years later and go for that 4-year degree, they can transfer into that. So we fit that niche between kids in high school who want to work with horses and are not quite ready for a 4-year degree.
That's a great stepping stone. I mean, it's
exactly
junior college type of thing. And once again, reinforcing what Robert and we've been talking about, you go through this and you want to work, you're going to find a job.
And I think the thing about it, too, that I find exciting is a lot of these kids have no family relationship to the horse business. So we as faculty and as people who've been in the industry a long time, you know, I like to pay it forward and take a lot of these young students and introduce them. During the Keeneland meet, I'll take him over to meet Todd Pletcher, Christophe Clement, whatever. And it's amazing how many of them end up in full-time, good full-time jobs like that.
The website for parents, KCTCS?
Yes, exactly. So KCTCS is like the mothership of all the community colleges. So if they Google BCTC Equine Program, it'll pop up through
I'll
the
send
KCTCS.
The link out too. Yeah. Finally, we've only got a minute or so, and this is my fault. You should have been on here with me ages ago. Tell me about the mural. About the mural I saw.
Yes. Well, I did my first mural, so obviously I have very big shoes to fill with my dad, who's still bucking and kicking at 96 years old.
Unbelievable.
But I have two very nice folks in Lexington who. Commissioned me to do my first mural, so it was basically an 11-foot by 5-foot wall in a house, And I called my dad and I said, I'm doing my first mural. Give me some advice. And he said, well, you start in one corner, and until there's no more white left, you'll be done. And I go, okay, thanks. but it was a fun project, and it's I'm having a lot of fun doing work with TDN. I gave him a shout-out, and Florida Horse, my two big, supporters. And I just love to... My dad taught me one thing, is that you have to have a sense of humor in this industry, and so hopefully I can bring some of that to what is that? No, otherwise a pretty serious business.
Well, the Belloc name and the imagery is beloved and an important part of racing lore. Remy Belloc, and got to pull up. We'll be back here tomorrow for another 3 hours of conversation from the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing. I want to thank Remy, and thank you, Robert Hartman, Peter Eckebert, and Eric Hamelbeck from the National HBPA, MIG with a visit, as well as Keith Dolschel and Hammer. Limited racing today. There is a decent stake, a little stake at Parks today. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM and later on the website, Archive Podcast. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thought there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best.